Thank you, Sharon. I'm Julie Cox Kane. I'm the Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services and the Senior Deputy Commissioner at the Oklahoma State Department of Health. And I want to introduce a couple of people who are actually in the audience today. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, who provides great leadership to us, Dr. Terry Klein, and through his leadership, these kinds of activities are possible in the state of Oklahoma. But also, and maybe more importantly for this session, John Lowry, who is our chronic disease director in the state of Oklahoma. My task here is to present our Million Hearts Collaborative more from a leadership standpoint and to talk about how we leveraged it for other state initiatives. If you leave here and you have really granular, important, detailed questions about Million Hearts, I would encourage you to see John Lowry at the end of the session. He knows everything about what we did in Million Hearts, and I'm glad he's here, thankful for it today. So actually, you know, just to say a couple of things, because I am up here kind of from a more global perspective, a lot of the focus that I work on in the state of Oklahoma is on health transformation efforts in the state of Oklahoma and outcome-driven public health and healthcare kinds of initiatives. And we really looked at this as a good opportunity for us to pilot test things that we've been saying in our state so that when people hear these concepts about integrating public health and healthcare, what does that really look like at a practical level? And what is it that we could really learn? In particular, because we're in a relatively rural state, we wanted to test some of the things that we know are kind of sweeping through healthcare right now in health transformation, patient-centered medical homes, value-based healthcare, care coordination. You know, one of the questions that we have for ourselves and the reason we wanted to implement this is how scalable is that? So we have a lot of those activities going on in the metropolitan areas in the state of Oklahoma, but what if you pick a rural area where the infrastructure and the medical facilities are limited? How do we start to piece together and integrate public health and healthcare in that setting? And in this case, we looked at the public health infrastructure that's developed in the state of Oklahoma, which is pretty robust. So we have clinics. We have more than 80 clinics in the state of Oklahoma in 68 counties. And is there a role for them in care coordination in a place where we know that there's limited infrastructure? Or how do we support patient-centered medical homes, care coordination? What does this mean for value-based or outcome-based health care payments in the future? So this was an opportunity to learn for ourselves and for that broader community of health professionals to learn in the state of Oklahoma. So to set the stage just a little bit about, you know, how we got where we got, this is national data, of which I'm sure you all have seen. One in three Americans, adults aged over 18, have high blood pressure. Less than half of persons with high blood pressure have it under control. Approximately 40% are unaware, but the last one was key for us. Nearly 90% of adults with uncontrolled high blood pressure had a usual source of health care and insurance. So people who know they have high blood pressure, it's out of control, and they don't have that barrier of insurance. So a lot of our model is built around this. These people should be low-hanging fruit. They have a place to seek care. At the state level, though, and just to kind of give you a global perspective, on the United Health Foundation, America's Health Rankings, Oklahoma ranks 44th. We're up from 49th from just a few years ago. We also rank 49th on the Commonwealth Fund Health Systems Effectiveness Scorecard. So we've got a lot of issues to address in terms of health behaviors, population health, but also medical systems effectiveness. You can see that we have 36% of Oklahomans report being diagnosed with high blood pressure compared to 31% in the United States. And heart disease accounts for nearly 4,000 avoidable deaths in 2012 in persons younger than 75. Years of age, and the total charges. So when we start to talk about sustainable health systems or payment systems for health, total charges related to hospital disease stays totaled more than $2.1 billion in 2010. So if we could start to reduce that number, we think that we can yield savings. Locally, we went to what is routinely the region that pops out every heat map on health risk behaviors or on burden of disease. We went to the southeast region. You can see in 2012, 41% of adults in that area reported being diagnosed with high blood pressure compared to the other regions in our state that ranged from 31 to 36. Within Pittsburgh County alone, it's the most populated county in that area. 39% of the 34,734 adults reported being diagnosed with high blood pressure, and you can see their age-adjusted mortality rate for heart disease in that county at 170 deaths per year. So this is the state of Oklahoma. And there's the southeast region. The five counties that were in our pilot are highlighted there in gold. And you can see how that lays out against the rest of the state. Our goal overall was to reduce the number of cardiovascular disease events in southeastern Oklahoma. We have a ways to get there, but this was a great way for us to get our feet wet. We chose, again, those five counties that were in gold. And we did use a provider-directed care coordination team. So, again, these people are people who have access to insurance. They have a usual source of care. They ought to be low-hanging fruit for an intervention like this. Can we get to that group of individuals who have uncontrolled blood pressure in a format where they actually have access to care? And we use multiple evidence-based strategies. So clinician-initiated and ordered care plans around hypertension, nurse and pharmacist assessments that were protocol-driven. So we did develop a lot of protocols, standardized protocols, again, around how blood pressure is taken, but also in care coordination. We used a care coordinator, a nurse care coordinator, out of the local county health department to do care coordination in order to facilitate adherence to the care plan that was developed by the clinician, and enhance communication around this team of providers that surrounds a person when they have something like hypertension. We tried to utilize technology for panel management. We'll talk about the challenges with that here in a minute, I think similar to what Vermont just mentioned, actually. And then aligning outcomes with pay for success. So we definitely wanted a payment mechanism in here where we were rewarding teams of providers, community-based, with a global payment for achieving an outcome, which was hypertension control among our population. So to do this, you actually need a team of partners that cut across various fields. And so in the first bullet, we had our healthcare compensation system. So our insurers, two of the largest in our state, one being our Medicaid system, our sister agency, the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, but the other is our largest private insurer, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oklahoma. They were really both fantastic. And as we talked about, how we set up payment structures to reward outcome-driven care or health care, you know, it became obvious very quickly to us when we were initially awarded these grants. We had 9 months to stage these interventions, that enacting that kind of policy change is a little bit difficult in 9 months' time. What we got from them, though, were data, and we got support for value-based payment models around outcome-driven care. The other group there you see are healthcare providers and systems. This is a natural community of care. These people are treating individuals in and around that regional area, and it's important because that's where care networks and care coordination should occur, around those natural communities of practice. And then we had healthcare systems specialists. Our College of Pharmacy was really invaluable to us, to be able to go out and interface with pharmacists locally in the community, standardize protocol, and even to be able to educate us all around the state laws and policies that exist around interactions that are allowed with pharmacists and physicians in the state of Oklahoma. One of maybe the most valuable, though, partners in this entire list is at the bottom, which is the Oklahoma Foundation for Medical Quality. They're the ones who go out to practices, look at how they interface with their EHR, see if there's registries for hypertensive patients, understand how they can pull reports out of the systems. So they were critical for us in this particular project. This is our model that we developed. So just quickly to kind of go over how this is laid out, you can see that at the bottom there, the clinician is really sort of in the center directing care. I might just take a minute to say that the word clinician even became really important. So some of the things that we learned when we went down there, and I think that we started with physician-led care teams. And in part, to be frank, it's because scope of practice issues are a little bit delicate in our state, as they are in most states. But being that this is a rural area in which there are challenges on access to care, we were quickly told, you need to change that to clinician. Even docs were telling us, you need to change this to clinician. Our nurse practitioners are really important to how people get care in our local communities. So we had a lot of learnings, and some of them were just things like that. The pharmacists are doing interactions here on the left around at times when people are filling or refilling their medication. Specifically, they're looking and talking to them about blood pressure and controlling the medications to make sure that blood pressure is under control. On the right side, the nurse care coordinators are managing people, taking their blood pressure, managing people through adherence, but also assessing risk and working with other things like aspirin therapy, cholesterol management, and smoking cessation, which became a big part of what we did, both reporting into the clinician. On the bottom part of this are the outcomes that we hope to achieve, and many of this are the same levers that Sharon mentioned when she started this presentation. So we really had kind of a big, lofty goal when we started this project about how many levers we might be able to pull. We actually undertook, with the help of ASTO and a consultant, a return on investment tool, trying to figure out, you know, what do we yield through care coordination and preventing hospitalizations locally in the community. That analysis continues, but we were successful at that. It's important for future conversations about how investments in healthcare are made, and perhaps even payment structures that come from insurers in the future, that we be able to really nail down and talk about return on investments. Value-based allocation, we actually brought that group of healthcare providers together and said, we want to make a global payment to you all for success. Everybody who's a part of it, that includes the local health department, that includes the pharmacist, and that includes, in this case, the hospital. Actually, we were having a conversation with one of our insurers about investing in this process, which they have done or are doing, but they told us at the time, we can get you money faster than you can get to a community-derived value-based allocation method on a global payment, and they were wrong. We actually got there within probably the first month. So that I thought we thought was pretty phenomenal. We did. We were trying to achieve NQF-18 measurement, as Sharon discussed. And up to this point, there was a lot of conversation around what is a universal language between public health and healthcare and insurers. And this solidified for us that NQF measures are really a universal language for us. We're very driven towards outcomes, but we focus them on different kinds of things like Healthy People 2020 objectives and the like. But by really figuring out how to crosswalk that to NQF, we have a universal language with healthcare. We are achieving at some level primary care and public health integration. We did set standardized policies for care coordination and blood pressure measurement. So standardized blood pressure measurement protocol, it again sounds like it shouldn't be that big a deal. It ends up being a pretty big deal where they aren't standardized, as Sharon pointed out. An evaluation of local electronic health record capability. So I'll just say this was a real challenge to our particular project. When we first went down there into southeastern Oklahoma, only 30% of the providers there had electronic health records. As a state, we are a low EHR adoption state. We have low numbers of providers or proportion of providers actually achieving meaningful use in our state. So it continues to be a challenge for us, and it actually meant that we had a relatively low rate of referrals. I think it was the biggest driver for a low rate of referrals into our project. And since John Lowry's nodding, he agrees with me, because it's just too hard to manually go through patients' records, obviously, with a clinic management system or a paper-based system to refer individuals into care coordination. We did achieve pay-for-performance contracts, with some of the providers in the local community and a community-derived allocation method. We continue to help work with ASTO on calculating the return on investment and using that tool. And I think we've gotten positive return on investment in this particular project. And then we used this and leveraged, and I'll touch on this a little bit more on the last slide, a reverse patient referral process in partnership with our Medicaid agency, letting them mine their claims data and help us figure out how to notify physicians with Medicaid clients that they had people who were hypertensive that could benefit from this particular project. It did yield more referrals to us. So some of the kind of broader influencers, I think, that we had that were led to our success was we had an open dialogue with key stakeholders, and it was very open at the community level in particular, but even at the state level, about where health is being transformed to, but we had common goals. So there was a lot of cooperation, just a ton of cooperation, maybe more than we anticipated at the beginning, particularly when we focused it on common goals and evidence-based strategies being used by all partners. There was observable support for us bridging disciplines, and as I pointed out, in fact, they think multiple disciplines are quite important to care in southeastern Oklahoma. And we leveraged both state and local resources towards a seamless process. So just to finish, I wanted to focus just a little bit more on how we used this information for the broader things that we've got going on. In the state of Oklahoma, we've had a state health improvement plan. We're on our fifth year. We're currently rewriting it. A fairly significant portion of that plan is health transformation. This work really informed some of the objectives that we set, and it actually built closer bridges with some of those partners so that they actually staff and manage and champion some of those teams of people that bring stakeholders together to talk about some of these things. A couple of things, or one example I'll point out is we had to be really specific about where we want to go with EHR adoption. So like I said, we have a low EHR adoption rate, and some of the strategies that we want to use towards that, including one that, is one that we'll just have to explore as the health improvement plan goes in, but it's around consumer protections for providers who invest in electronic health records and don't get exactly what it is that they paid for. So we found when our medical quality team went in that docs thought they could draw reports out on hypertension and they couldn't in their clinics, and there was some programming that needed to occur there. So we're finding this when people buy these systems to do certain things. Sometimes the EHR vendors haven't necessarily provided them what they needed. We used this work, actually, in public health and healthcare collaboration work that we do. So we are routinely visiting now with insurers, but we have a much more specific project with our Medicaid agency on quality improvement, where we have five quality improvement teams that are, again, assessing data and doing rapid cycle sort of intervention. We have one on hypertension, so one of those five is hypertension, and we were able to leverage their claims and their predictive modeling software. So sometimes they have software investments that you can leverage for your public health work. The National Governors Association, we're actually the recipient of an NGA, a Workforce Policy Academy right now, and interestingly, the focus is not just on recruitment and retention of healthcare providers, something we sorely lack in the state of Oklahoma, but it is on this transformation of healthcare, and we actually just had the NGA in on Friday, and when asked, what is the number one thing that you guys think that we should address with on this health workforce issue, care coordination came up first. Teaching us and getting all of the resources we need to do robust care coordination in our state. So it's pretty remarkable because we're moving from an era of hearing loan repayment and rural residencies into how do we do team-based care coordination in our community. Private-public partnerships also making its way to our new state health improvement plan. Blue Cross Blue Shield has invested in the continuation and sustainability of this project moving forward. We're also actually leveraging, chronic disease 1422 money out of a chronic disease grant moving forward and expanding this. But I think there's more room for private-public partnership and investments into things where we can demonstrate that we can yield a return. So that return on investment tool is critical in that way. And then we have an application in currently to CMMI for a state innovation model for payment reform, which looks at linking together public health outcome measures and clinical population health outcome measures, very directed at specific goals. And we've added hypertension as a goal, so we want to continue this Million Hearts work with SIM and actually build in these performance-based payments into payments for healthcare systems and providers locally.
Thank you.